broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
And that be us. Hi, Carrie.
Howdy, Terry.
On this wonderful, beautiful first day of summer here in beautiful British Columbia, we have come in from the sunshine, the rare sunshine.
Yeah, I know. I was traumatized coming in because there was this orange ball in the sky, and there was warmth radiating from it, and I wondered, where am I?
Oh, I thought maybe you'd just look at yourself in the mirror.
Actually, you know what?
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yes, okay. It's going to be like that tonight, is it, Terry O'Neill?
Yes, yeah,
well, I might have to just get you.
Okay. Well, there'll be plenty of opportunity. We have 2 hours. And because it's the longest day of the year, maybe we can go long. I don't know. Probably not.
It's roadkill.
We'll try to keep it to 2 hours. We have a big show tonight. There'll be some therapy moments for both of us coming up. But before, I just want to let you, all the viewers and listeners, know what is on the show tonight. Later in the show, we'll be talking to Dr. Miriam Grossman. Is that correct?
That
Dr. Miriam Grossman. She's a physician with training in pediatrics, as well as child, adolescent, and adult psychiatry.
She's a busy lady these days.
Yes, she is. And she recently testified before the California legislature on a harm associated with indoctrinating children with mandatory pro-homosexual or pro-transgender education. It'd be very interesting to hear what she has to say about that.
Sounds like BC.
Well, it's definitely concerns that have been raised by some members of the public here and got aired on this show over the last several months and several years, actually. So it'd be interesting to see what Dr. Miriam Grossman has to say. We have, in the last day or two, we've decided we are going to add a middle segment to the show, and that is because yesterday in court here in British Columbia, Don Spratt and Sissy Von Dane were found guilty of breaching the bubble zone legislation in British Columbia, even though it's supposed to.
You know what, Terry? I attended some of this trial, and number one, as a taxpayer, I am royally ticked off that our dollars would be being spent on somebody, or two people in this case, doing what I view the government should be doing, educating people about the law, because that's all they were doing.
Good for you. Yeah, absolutely. It's outrageous. And Don Spratt will join us by phone to talk about the case. And you haven't seen anything in the downstream media about this. We'll have the first news of this.
Well, Roadkill Radio was there.
Roadkill Radio was there. Ron Gray was there.
Ron Gray issued
a lengthy press release, a good detailed press release yesterday, alerting the media to this and essentially challenging the downstream media to get their paddles out and start rowing up the stream.
Well, we did all the work for you guys, okay? You know, that press release was pretty comprehensive
The
hope that maybe part of your brains would click in and something would make it to press.
And in just a few minutes, we'll be talking to a spokesperson from the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute about the terrible plague of breast cancer and about some of the causes for it, specifically one, and linking it to a political budgetary campaign that's on here in British Columbia as well. And we're not going to give too many details of that away, but we'll get to that in a moment. But first, when last we met here, it was a Tuesday night, the day before Game 7.
You remember.
Yes, it was our pre-Stanley Cup date here. And Game 7 of the Stanley Cup finals.
When life was still good.
That's right. When we were still innocent.
There was hope.
When all British Columbians still had their innocence. Before our reputation was dragged through the mud because of the Game 7 riot. And, you know, there's been hundreds of thousands, if not millions of words and millions of written about the riots and millions of minutes of videotape shown. And
at least.
Like. It's been fascinating fallout from all of that. I've written about one aspect of it for the Tri-City News this coming Friday. We'll be debating whether or not we thought the Vancouver police did a good job, and I thought they did a horrendous job. No planning.
Who?
Vancouver. They weren't even there.
Who?
Were they? Yeah, that's right. Well, what officers were in place, certainly, I can't fault them. They were vastly outnumbered, so either poor planning,
and
poor deployment.
Ill-equipped.
Poor equipment, whatever. It was a travesty. And for some reason, my debating partner thinks they did a wonderful job. I don't know. how we can think that. But one of the other aspects of this...
Wait a minute. That's why we're having an inquiry.
Yeah.
They did such an amazingly wonderful job.
Very strange.
That questions don't need to be answered.
One of the other really interesting aspects of all of this is that a lot of the rioters, of course, were caught on YouTube and stuff like that, and pictured and identified and been forced into issuing public apologies, essentially.
Shamed into it.
And there have been consequences already, probably 2 years before the courts will take action. One of the apologies from a young woman really caught my attention. Her name is Camille Cachnio, C-A-C-N-I-O, a student. And she was captured on film and on video, looting a menswear store.
Of all things.
She issued a seven-page, I don't know how many words, 5,000-word apology and explanation. Well, it started out as an apology. If she'd stopped after half a page, it would have been, that's it. She apologized to the city, apologized to Vancouver, the Canucks, to Black and Lee, the men's store that she looted. And, okay, she had ended it there, fine.
Yeah.
But then she went on. To rationalize. And in doing so, she quoted all sorts of experts talking about how people who have hyped up adrenaline can make bad decisions. People who are drunk make bad decisions. Yep, that was me.
Oh.
Yep, that was me. And stuff like that.
Well, the victim syndrome.
That immediately reminded me of, remember I had quite a therapy moment here a couple of months ago about the experts who were saying that how the body reacts in a crisis leaving out
it
one's
was it was a one. Woman who passed away and then it was a hit and run.
Hit and run, that's right.
Yeah.
And the expert was saying essentially that it's just the body that reacts. This totally absolving a person of any guilt, of any wrongdoing, of any
sin. We can just explain everything
away. Sort of
yeah.
So she embraces all of that to begin with and goes on and on. And she says, I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't jump on cop cars.
Wait, she didn't hurt anybody?
All of this stuff. So it's pretty pathetic. And other people are starting to go off on that. But what everybody else has missed is that halfway through this very weak mea culpa, she says, and I'm not such a bad person after all, she said. If you still don't believe I'm a good person, here's a little story for you. As many of you already know.
Wait a minute. I just need to have a moment here, Terry, because I can feel it coming on. So
okay.
She's
trying to persuade us she's a good person.
Okay.
She tells everybody that she's majoring in conservation biology at UBC. I strongly believe in ecological conservation and sustainability, she says. That night, in the middle of the riot, when she had apparently lost control of her senses through adrenaline, through alcohol. Remember, this is what she had said before him. That night, I saw a few people that were trying to knock down trees. So what did I do, she asked. I yelled at them, saying, please, and that's how she spelled it, please, not the trees. And what did they do? They stopped. I felt like a hero. Okay. Now, that's pretty lame and pathetic on its surface, right?
Wait. Okay. I'm just trying to ensure that I'm in this place of reality,
okay.
That the sunshine hasn't traumatized me into this state of shock, and I didn't just hear what I heard. Did I hear?
You heard. She's called herself a hero for stopping people from pulling up some trees, either just after or just before she looted a store. Now, here's where everything blows up from her whole. I mean, if her argument, her seven-page rationale hadn't already struck you as being pretty weak, this is where it absolutely is self-contradictory. She has just made the argument that she was incapable of making a proper moral decision, and therefore took part in looting.
Goes. Yeah.
But here she says that she was fully able to do the right thing by persuading people not to knock over some trees. And what this tells, so she's totally contradicted herself. She's undercut her main argument that she was incapable of making the proper decision by saying that she made the proper decision here. She had first, okay, so this is where it gets interesting, because she obviously, it's obviously now a question not of an automatic failure through drugs or hormones to take action, but it gets back to my point that I made a couple months ago. It's about your conscience and your moral formation.
Your personal value system.
Your personal value system. This woman said that she considers ecological conservation and sustainability to be of the highest priority for her.
Worth her being a hero for.
That moral code was able to kick in despite the riot, despite her drunkenness. The moral code that she alleges she has that would have prevented her from stealing didn't kick in.
Yeah, and corporate Canada doesn't deserve.
I would suggest that that is because she thinks trees are more important than people. And there we go. Anyway, that's basically bottom line. And people who've watched this show and have read my writings over the last couple of decades know where that's coming from and know all the rationale behind that statement and know all the studies and all the philosophy and everything that goes into that. This woman is probably one of the most... She sort of epitomizes what I fear is going wrong in our society.
Oh, I think she's the perfect poster child for it.
She's an idiot in the classical sense. An absolute town idiot.
And willing to perform publicly for us.
Well, and she's done it. By writing this, she has proved that she's an idiot.
Well, okay? That's her
and we'll leave it
performance.
At that. We'll leave it at that. So you can look it up yourself. Again, her name is Camille Cacnio, or Sacnio, C-A-C-N-I-O. And you Google her, and you'll find her smiling picture looting a store, and you'll find her rationale. And hopefully in the next week or so, you'll find my column in the National Post about that as well.
Is it true that she stole a pair of men's pants?
Two pairs of men's pants, but she just wanted to take them as souvenirs.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, does that make it okay then?
Okay.
Anyway. I'm trying to get into this, Terry.
Okay. Yeah, well, there you go. So, that's it. So, again, you are listening to Roadkill Radio. We are moving into the main body of our show now. And, of course, as usual throughout the course of the evening, if you have any questions, comments, or queries, please email us at roadkillradio@live.ca. We now welcome to the show Dr. Joel Brind of the U.S.-based Breast Cancer Prevention Institute. Dr. Brind, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, thank you for being patient and holding on while I got through my minute of therapy.
It was
there.
A fascinating discussion.
Yeah, oh, good. I'm glad you're
able. And you know, it actually did make the news here, what was going on in Vancouver.
Oh, yes, I know it made the news all over the world.
Hey, we're trendsetters up here,
that's
Dr.
Right.
Brind.
What's that?
We're trendsetters.
Trendsetters.
Up here, you know?
I thought.
Well, I think it's not. It's not a trend that. Well, maybe it started on the West Coast. That's maybe true. I'd like to say that. Usually talking about California, that what used to be considered the lunatic fringe has become the lunatic mainstream.
Yeah, there you go. Listen, Dr. Brind, we contacted you at the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute because of something that's going on here in British Columbia, an organization called Options for Sexual Health. Which is the new name in Canada for Planned Parenthood, which people across North America.
Yeah, that's the new name for the Eugenics Society.
Okay. Right, exactly. So it's gone through several transformations. It has been, for the last year or so, conducting a public campaign. Hasn't been getting a lot of publicity, but it's just come across our desk recently, to persuade the provincial government here to cover the entire full cost of birth control pills for all women in British Columbia. If they want birth control pills, they'll get them for free. And there are many.
But they're not free, though, Terry.
They're not free.
Yeah, they want me.
They want
and
me and you to pay for them. That's right.
Yeah, but you have to understand, I think, the difficulty that the Canadian government is. Here you have this tiny little closet of a country that has to house all these millions of people. And the population pressure in a place like Canada is so intense.
Oh, yes.
They have just got to control the population.
Well, overcrowding,
overcrowding,
know, it's a daily challenge here. Yeah.
Well, there are there's certainly economic questions regarding all of this. There are even moral questions about the use of birth control pill. In some religious groups, Roman Catholics specifically, have grave objections about the use of the birth control pill. But we're contacting you to talk about some health concerns.
Well, the practical aspects of it.
Practical. Health is nothing more practical than health.
Right, yeah. And, you know, there is a, you know, often when that distinction is made, you know, well, those are the health distinctions, and then there are these moral concerns. And we don't really want to get involved in the moral concerns here. We want to stick to the health and the science.
But right.
There is a very compelling moral concern that certainly crosses into our area, and that is the moral imperative to tell the truth.
Ah, yes.
The moral imperative to actually work and practice toward benefiting the health of people that you serve rather than to destroy their health. These are moral concerns, and that's all about doing the right thing to save the people and not just the trees.
Now, Dr. Brenda, but before we go on, by the way, I'm calling you doctor because you have a PhD. You're not a medical doctor, though, right?
That's correct,
okay,
yeah.
Good. What is your PhD in?
It's in basic medical sciences.
Okay, great.
Major in biochemistry and minors in immunology and physiology, but my teaching and research for most of my career has actually been in endocrinology,
okay,
and also a fair amount in epidemiology. These areas tend to cross a lot of lines.
Right. So thank you for that. I wanted to get that clear so our listeners and viewers know about that. Now, it seems that every second month there's a breast cancer campaign or a fundraiser, maybe every month, and there are certainly specific times of the year when it's all breast cancer all the time, pink ribbons, the NFL
right.
gets pink shoes and pink this and that, and it's a huge problem, breast cancer. I dare say there's probably not a family, including Carrie's and mine, that hasn't been affected by breast cancer. And in all of these things, there's usually stories that come out talking about the big spike in the number of breast cancer cases. And people are looking for the reasons, and a lot of people sort of turn to carcinogens in the atmosphere and our water. And other people say, well, women are just living longer, and if breast cancer doesn't get them, something else will. But you hardly ever read about the many dozens of studies that have shown a positive correlation between the use of birth control pills and breast cancer. And that's something
right.
that I understand that you are have done quite a bit of research about.
Yes, and as I pointed out, my expertise really kind of segued into epidemiology. That's where you look for those correlations, those connections between greater concentrations of disease among people who have a greater exposure to something like the birth control pill or whatever else you happen to be studying.
Okay.
That's really epidemiology, and my expertise really goes back to my work in steroids. That was mainly my specialty in endocrinology. And all of these birth control pills and the postmenopausal estrogen replacement pills, those are all steroid hormones, or they're all actually steroid drugs. They mimic steroid hormones. And that's usually not spoken about. And what's interesting about breast cancer is that in recent years, actually going back to 2003 to about 2006, that was the first time really in recent memory that the incidence of breast cancer went down substantially. And the reason it went down is because women stopped using what are called combination hormone replacement therapy, that is combination estrogen replacement therapy after the menopause. And it's been recognized even on a molecular level that these steroids actually cause breast cancer. They're known as class 1 carcinogens, classified as such by the World Health Organization. And what's interesting about the postmenopausal combination estrogen replacement drugs is that they are actually of the same type but milder and in a lower dose than the birth control pill.
Oh, my goodness.
Which are also definitely classified as class 1 carcinogens. We know that they increase the risk of breast cancer, and we know exactly why they do it. We know how they're turned into carcinogens. We know exactly what molecular changes can take place. And now, in fact, we're identifying one of the most virulent forms of breast cancer called triple-negative breast cancer that seems to be particularly tied to the synthetic steroids that are in birth control pills. So here's where the moral element comes in. We're not even talking about, the subjects such as whether or not birth control pills may be abortifacient at early stages. And this is the kind of argument that's difficult to solve because we don't have any direct evidence. But we do have direct evidence that they certainly cause cancer in women. And this is the kind of thing that is hidden from the public. They are viewed as safe. And so it's considered to be wrong to talk about them, or one is considered an extremist to talk about their harm to women. And when you get right down to exposures such as birth control pills and abortions for that matter, it is certainly arguable that the breast cancer charities, which actively deny these risks, they certainly cause more breast cancer through their denial and their covering up of these known risk factors than they save by raising money and doing research on breast cancer. So the breast cancer charities, Komen, the American Cancer Society, and most of the rest of them are quite corrupt. Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October is basically their Christmas season. That's where they raise most of their money. They do it through promulgation of major lies, like, for example...
Okay, before we go there, can you just hold that thought? Because it's Carrie had a question that she wanted to ask a couple of minutes ago, and but you were on such a good roll there that we just backed off. Carrie.
Oh, that's all right. Go ahead.
No,
you know, I mean, just at the start of this conversation, because, you know, I'm in the thick of the generation where the birth control pill was foisted upon the public. You know, all my girlfriends, that was the vogue thing to do because they made it cool and that's what you were supposed to do. Whether you were having sexual relations or not, just in case you ever did, you went on the pill. I mean, the marketing aspects of this, but it is very true. There is one large group that has a factor of, that's a common denominator, and that they all, you know, have taken the birth control pill. And now,
yes, very widely used. Yeah.
Well, and now so many of my friends and close relatives, some very close family members, of mine, you know, are going through the last stages of their life, dying way too young. In one case, a very close relative of mine, my sister, who's just 16 months younger than I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very sad.
Still in her 20s, eh?
Yeah. well, almost.
Yeah. Very good. Dr. Brand, you mentioned about birth control pill, it's an actual chemical reaction or is it a hormonal interruption of some sort that is associated with the breast cancer? And I'm asking that question because I've heard and read that there is no better prevention of breast cancer than to have an early pregnancy and carry it to term. That apparently is associated with a very low incidence of breast cancer.
That's right. The best protector against breast cancer.
Right.
Is
right. And if you have a pregnancy that is interrupted, either artificially or naturally, through an artificial abortion or a natural abortion of some sort, that causes problems and leads to higher incidence of breast cancer.
Well, it's slightly more complex than that.
Yes,
and
okay.
That is that most miscarriages or spontaneous abortions occur because there's something abnormal about the pregnancy. And generally they occur very early on and they actually have no effect on the incidence of breast cancer because they occur before you get that tremendous surge in pregnancy hormones. And those growth spurt-inducing pregnancy hormones are the ones that are mimicked by the birth control pills precisely for the purpose of inducing a state of pseudo-pregnancy in order to prevent ovulation.
Right.
To prevent the development of new eggs and ovulation. That's how the pills work, mainly. I mean, whether there are abortifacient effects and so on, these are arguable, but even discounting that for the moment, we know that they are there to induce a state of pseudo-pregnancy. We also know that they are synthetic steroid drugs. They're not, they say that they call them hormonal contraception. They say right on the package that the pill contains hormones. Birth control pills contain no hormones. They contain synthetic steroid drugs that act like hormones. Mm. They are more potent than the natural hormones, and they have to be because in order to work as an oral pill, it has to be relatively resistant to degradation by the liver, because whenever you take anything by mouth, when it's absorbed in the gut, the first place it goes is to the liver. And the liver's job is to chop stuff like that up and inactivate it.
Right.
So if you, for example, took natural estrogen and progestin that are made by the ovaries and took them orally in order to use them as birth control pills, they wouldn't work.
Mm.
Because half of them, the strength would be cut in half immediately before it even got into the general circulation by the action of the liver. So they have to be deliberately active, very active hormones, more potent than the natural ones and resistant to degradation by the liver. And so they do two things in terms of breast cancer. It seems that they cause breast cancer in two ways. First of all, by mimicking the hormonal environment of early pregnancy, they cause growth in the breasts, which will also promote the growth of any abnormal and potentially cancerous cells that are there. The second thing they do is because they are synthetic steroid hormones, they seem to be converted into some very potent primary carcinogens, which will turn normal cells into mutated potential cancer cells in the first place. That's called primary carcinogenesis. And we're looking very carefully now at this type of particularly noxious breast cancer called triple negative breast cancer that seems specifically linked to the birth control pill.
Hmm.
What about the injections that so many women are keen on these days? I think there's some that, you know, will stay in your body for 6 months. There's others that will last 5 years. Do those have the same effect?
Right. Well, some of them are actually the same synthetic type of a progesterone-like steroid that they use as these injectable ones, as depo-provera, medroxyprogesterone acetate, or norethosterone is another one. There are a couple of them, and those are ones that have also been used in the oral forms, also synthetic, specifically made to be difficult to be degraded by the liver. And there's not a whole lot of data on them in terms of breast cancer risk, but there's no reason to believe that they wouldn't do the same sort of thing in terms of breast cancer risk. So, and the main increase in risk is really to the young women who have not had children yet. There are now sort of defensive epidemiological studies, which are essentially fraudulent, that are being promulgated by some of the mainstream universities and medical authorities in the world that I have also rebutted in British medical journals, for example, which claim that their many-year studies in England show that these things are really safe. But they go back to studies that are based on pills taken by women recruited in the 1960s and 70s, when most of them were in their late 20s and early 30s. Hmm. They had already had their children, and they took birth control pills for only a few years. Now, of course, they give them to all the young girls. They take them for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, maybe even a decade or two before they ever have any children, if mm-hmm. they do. And these are the ones who are getting enormous exposures to these carcinogenic compounds, and they cause breast cancer. There's really no honest scientist who knows anything about it would deny that birth control pills cause breast cancer.
Now,
they don't cause it all the time. Not everybody who takes the pill causes breast cancer. And it's just a matter of taking them for a longer and longer period of time, and mostly taking them before one has children.
Is the increased risk statistically significant? I've heard some rebuttals say that, well, you know, it's a 1.4 increased risk, and in terms of epidemiology, that's not really a significant thing. It's got to be quite a bit bigger to be a big impact or something like that.
Well, that depends on that term. When you talked about 1.4, we're talking about relative risk, and relative risk is, as the term implies, relative. So 1.4, for example, means that you have a 40% increased risk over what the risk would be without that particular exposure. Well, if the incidence of the disease is very high, so that you 1 in 10 women, let's say, gets breast cancer, and with this exposure it goes up to something like 1 in 8 because she has maybe a 25% increased risk, that's a very big number. It
right.
depends on how common the disease is, and they usually will point to something like cigarettes. Oh, well, yes, cigarettes increases the risk tenfold or twentyfold, but, you know, before cigarettes came around, lung cancer was a rare disease. You know, breast cancer was not a rare disease. It wasn't that common. It became common with the trends in Western industrialized civilization to have fewer children and especially to have them starting at a much later age. This explains most of the difference in breast cancer incidence between the Western industrialized world, where the incidence is traditionally very high, in excess of 10% in recent decades, versus places like Asia, where the incidence is more like 2%. The difference is really the length of the interval between puberty and first childbirth. That's mainly it. That's what's been lengthened. Women go into, or girls go into menarche. They get their period at a younger age. They wait longer and longer to have their first child. They have fewer children, and the way that childbearing is delayed between abortion and birth control pills adds to the risk. You put all those things together, and there's your 10%, 12% risk instead of 2 or 3.
Why are we lying to these young women then? Why are we not giving them the facts and saying, okay, govern yourselves accordingly? You know, and I have to say, here in Canada, you know, I have a vested interest in people staying healthy because the costs to our healthcare system are out of control. And I rather like truth, and I don't think I'm a big burden to the healthcare system. I'd like other people not to be. And if there's preventative ways we can do things, shouldn't we be telling people these facts?
Well, but that's not the agenda of the people who we have allowed to teach our children.
What is their agenda?
People who tell them that trees are more important than these people. No, I'm serious. These people.
Yeah, you're in my camp on that
zealots
one.
Who believe that the human species is a cancer upon this wonderful planet.
Oh my goodness, you're talking.
That most of us really need to be wiped out in order to restore the planet to her wonderful virgin glory.
Wait a minute, do you run Terry O'Neill tapes in your head at night, Dr. Brin? This is
never heard him before. No.
You're
but
speaking
I mean,
his
maybe
language.
We just, you know, we're just seeing the same facts and coming up to the same reasonable
conclusion. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Dr. Brin, you know, a few months ago I wrote a letter to our foreign minister of all things, because the UN has simply jumped on this mandatory sex education at a younger and younger age, you know, mandatory sex education classes for elementary schools now. And one of the things that's a constant theme here is we call it sexucation now. You know, it's not public education anymore. But one of the things that struck me is, you know, have our schools become basically the greatest marketing strategy for pharmaceutical companies?
Well, they join in. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies have been kind of recruited into the system as crony capitalist useful idiots, whatever you like to call it, to the zealots at the center of it who want to impose this very bizarre world view. And we trust them somehow to have similar motives as our own at our peril and the peril of future generations. That's why I say these are, you know, you wonder how that young woman who just made the apology for rioting, I mean, she's actually a good student. All she's doing is respecting and believing and following the teachings of her teachers in whose trust her parents placed her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the teachers in those universities teach. Mm. These are radical religious zealots of a religion that is very foreign from any of the basic ones we learned about. We're talking about, radical, environmentalism and just basically a belief not even rooted in anything remotely friendly to the human species.
Okay, let's.
We're talking the kind of philosophy, you can call it that, that runs the universities, that teach our children. It's completely bizarre.
Yeah.
To anything we grew up with.
Right. We certainly explore all the many manifestations of that, the toxic manifestations of that on the show. It's one of the reasons Roadkill Radio exists, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't even know. Frankly, I had never heard of Roadkill Radio because I'm an East Coast.
That's right.
We're coming for you now.
That's right.
An East Coast Chardonnay sipping.
That's fine. We'll excuse you.
Dilettante, right?
We end up with a lot of East Coast guests on, and we're very thankful for them staying up late because it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah, but he's sipping Chardonnay, so he's happy.
Oh well, he may be getting droopy eyed because of doing that.
No, Chardonnay picks you up. Yeah, Dr. Brin, I want to go back to the lies that we're telling young people and the withholding of information and facts on all of these fronts. And our viewers know here that I'm sort of the resident, organic farm girl that raises her own beef and chickens because she doesn't want steroids in the meats and, all those other things. The kids were all raised that way, all four of them, and, we tried to stay away.
No steroids in the kids
either. No steroids in these bodies, no.
No synthetic steroids.
No synthetic steroids,
that's right,
anyway.
Yeah.
Just the natural ones that belong there. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the natural hormones. I'm all okay with those, but those manufactured ones that come in pill form are just illegal in my house. Now, but in saying that, when you start looking to what the public education system's doing, whose responsibility is it, and how do we start infiltrating the thinking? I mean, now with the internet, one would think that people would do research, but people want to put their trust in doctors, people want to put their trust in public health nurses, the government wants to put its trust in the experts from the pharmaceutical companies, those kinds of things. How do we penetrate the thinking and at least cause people to start looking at the facts and the evidence and making informed decisions, and what alternatives can we provide for them? Because now we have this society that's, bent on birth control. Do we have healthy alternatives for them?
Oh, well, certainly in terms of alternatives for birth control, fertility regulations, that's an easy one because I teach endocrinology and I teach my students about it also, and that is you don't need to take any of these synthetic steroids in order to understand and regulate your own fertility. This is the kind of thing you can do with just simple things like taking your own temperature every morning. It's very easy, actually, to measure the effects of hormones on your own easily measurable physiological states and changes in state, like things like body temperature, consistency of cervical mucus, stuff like that. And so it's very easy, actually, for a woman to tell exactly where she is in her cycle. And once you do that, you couple that with the understanding that you're only fertile for 4 to 6 days a month, even if you have a cycle every lunar month. If you have a normal 28-day cycle, which is 13 cycles a year, and many women have fewer than that, you're only fertile for about really 4 days a month, and then, with a couple of days just to make sure, there are really only 6 days that one might be fertile. And if you know exactly when those 6 days are, which is very easy to tell, well then, if you're into contraception, there's barrier contraception, which could be used for just less than a week out of every month. And the rest of the time, you don't need to poison your body. And you can still regulate things just as effectively as you can with pills, or more so.
Yeah, and it strikes me as very much with the times to actually encourage something like that. We have a generation, as we saw with this young woman that I talked about at the beginning of the show, who is all for the ecology, all for things natural, all for finding balance with nature, all for being in touch with nature. Well,
I see what's coming.
Yeah. Okay. It's all the. But
out come the pills.
But then out come the pills. So it all seems to be this external stuff. It's okay when you're talking. There's this great divide that's taken place. Failure to connect.
They call it cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. Okay. Cognitive dissonance. Absolutely.
And is it just we've educated out the role of personal responsibility in so much of this. We go to the quick fix solution, a pill for this, a pill for that. You know, actually a while ago we interviewed one of the individuals involved in you know, the drug issues here in Canada. And, you know, I said, but we're educating kids that this is how you fix your life. You know, we put little kids on Ritalin when they're 4 and 5. Then we promote the birth control pill because all those methods that you talked about, you know, are vilified in the public education system and poo-pooed. You know, you can't do that.
Yeah, because those really engender legitimate personal autonomy.
Yes.
And although they're all for you know, individual autonomy, they're really not.
No. Yeah, this is the
That's what's scary, when the individual is truly empowered to take one's own life into one's own hands. That's when the government loses control, and these are all statists. These are all people who want the government to control everything.
Well, mother government takes care of all of our needs. Didn't you know that?
Yeah, that's very interesting when you talk about government. And Carrie was reading some of the background documents from Options for Sexual Health, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood, supporting their push
for birth control pills for everybody.
And it's really, Carrie, tell us what you found.
Well,
there.
I mean, this isn't going to come to any surprise to you, Dr. Byrne, but this whole document and the reasoning that they've provided to our provincial government here as the sales pitch is, of course, all economic related. You know, keep women in the workforce. Don't let them be home with babies. Keep those tax revenues flowing. I mean, this is all the language through this document as far as the reasoning that's going to our provincial government.
Yeah, so birth control pills might cost $80 million a year to give free to everybody, but they're going to look at all the extra taxes we're going to get.
Yeah, but Terry, what the document also doesn't address to, and I think this goes to Dr. Brin's, you know, if we're going to do this, let's be honest about it, and that's what I've always said. If you want to go screw up your life, go for it, but do it in an informed way, you know? This document doesn't talk about it. It talks about all the economic costs to taxpayers for women having babies too young and all those kinds of things. But what you're telling us, Dr. Brin, is that there is an economic benefit because these women aren't going to get sick when they're 40 years old.
Well, not only that, but the economic benefit that they're claiming is bogus.
Yes.
Because as I mentioned, you can get perfectly fine, even better fertility regulation than you can with the pill. I mean, if you actually sample your cervical mucus and take your temperature every morning and you know exactly where you are on your cycle, and then maybe you get a cold or you get a sore throat and you have to take antibiotics or whatever you have to do, you keep monitoring your fertility, you'll still know exactly where you are on your cycle. But if you're just depending on the pill and then you're taking antibiotics for your strep throat for a week, then the pill is going to get neutralized by some of those other things you're doing, and it becomes less reliable. So the bottom line here really is that it's a bogus argument to say, well, with these birth control pills, women are going to be in the workplace longer and they're going to have fewer children. That's not true. If these girls are taught to monitor their own fertility, and they're going to have even better control of their own fertility, well, then they're going to have exactly the children that they want to have when they want them, as much as is possible in terms of our own controlling our fate, but certainly much more than relying on what comes in a bottle. So it's the idea that they're going to save any money at all by somehow achieving better control of fertility is bogus in the first place, plus the fact that they are foisting something that's poisonous on otherwise perfectly healthy people, which is going to increase the health care costs in the future. And when you talk about the future, well, that's when all those babies they don't want to have grow up, but they won't be there in order to pay into the taxes to take care of the health of their parents and grandparents.
Well, that's
and
one
so
of
every single one of their arguments is really exactly opposite to the truth.
Well, that's one of our arguments here is, you know, having given birth to 4 children, I've done more than my fair share of duty of repopulating Canada, right? You know, and there's so many people running around now who...
Yeah, but let's face it, they're human beings. Well, they're not like seals. If you had 4 seals...
I keep forgetting.
They would make cute little baby seals with their white fur coats. notes and everything that would make great pictures for calendars and everything. Now, that would be a contribution to Canada. Yeah. But you just had poor little human beings.
I'm so thankful that you have reminded me of how it really should be, as opposed to how I think it should be. This is, I need to have my thinking
readjusted.
You really
need to be re-educated.
I know.
Pretty soon the re-education camps will be.
Joel Brind, you have been at this, attempting to open the eyes of the culture to the connection between birth control pills and breast cancer for a decade and a half, at least that I'm aware of.
Coming on 2 decades. Yeah, close to 19 years I've been talking about abortion and breast cancer. And also, I guess it's going on to at least 19 years since I was talking about some of those abortifacient steroids, like RU486.
Right. All right. I believe that BC Report magazine, which I edited for most of the 1990s, was one of the first publications in North America to actually cover this issue.
Yes, it was the first BC Report in January of 1993.
Well, okay, there you go. Very specifically. So,
yes, that was the first published report of my research, I think.
Okay, there you go. So, and I was the editor of the magazine at the time. So I've been aware of you all of that time. And I brought this up not to sort of go back in time, but to look ahead. How successful have you been? I know I haven't been all that successful in trying to point out this information. And, you know, I keep doing stories about it and having you on my show here, assigning one of my reporters to you 18 years ago to do a story. Is it still pushing the big rock up the base of the mountain? Are you getting close to the top, or where are you here?
Well, it's the kind of thing that I think will be determined only when we get really a major shift in the thrust of the direction of government, and more and more and more they've been shifting ever so slowly but inexorably toward the pro-life position, so that now you have, I think, the latest mainstream survey in polling data done by, I think, Gallup in the United States shows that something like 60% of the population is pro-life. Now, you might say, well, this is really a woman's issue. It shouldn't matter whether you're pro-life or not. But it does get sucked up into that argument. There's no way you can say anything that is critical of abortion or birth control pills without being considered an enemy to the mainstream population control agenda.
Right, it's the feminist agenda that's
so
powerful.
So now, it is really a matter of which political wave is in ascendancy. And right now we have the Tea Party in this country, and I know we're probably a little bit behind the curve because conservatives just had a major victory in Canada. We're,
Well, our conservatives are sort of like moderate Democrats in
Well,
not all that conservative.
Some are more conservative than others. In this country also.
Yeah.
But I think people are waking up to the agenda that's really behind all of the population control initiatives. But unfortunately, it's probably now about two generations worth who have been educated in that, really steeped in that political agenda.
Yeah, I believe the proper word would be propagandized, not educated.
Yeah, propagandized, indoctrinated. These were the people, the radicals, who took over in the late 60s and the 70s, and they took over academic institutions at that time. They took over political institutions, the courts, and have wielded an enormous amount of influence. They certainly run the UN. It's kind of like in viewing the mindset of these people, whether it's Obama or all the rest of the minions who are like-minded. I sometimes refer to them as the Star Trek generation. If you're familiar with the Star Trek series on that was on TV for so many years, it's all in the future where mankind has evolved beyond the primitive notion of nation states.
Right.
So now we have a united federation of planets, where everything back home on planet Earth and other planets is in a nice, wonderful, perpetually peaceful socialist utopian paradise. and there aren't any wars or, you know, corruption or anything like that. That's all been
poverty's solved. Been eliminated. Poverty's been eliminated.
Yes, because mankind has evolved these primitive notions.
That's right.
You know, but then again, as George Orwell actually said, some ideas are so stupid that only intellectuals will believe them.
Very good. Listen, we have to move on to another subject, and I know we've kept you up late.
But
as
we're
well.
Having this guy back. This is a good discussion,
yeah.
and you might be hearing from me, Joel, because here at Roadkill, we tend to be activist radio. We don't just stop at the talk. I wish we did.
Well, that's good. I think that's great. I also enjoy the fact that we actually do have time for a real discussion and not just a few sound bites and then break for a commercial
right.
and so
good.
On and not really get a...
Excellent.
Well,
imperative. If you have me on again, I'll tell you what I really think.
Okay. All right. Sounds,
That's a date.
That's a deal.
Absolutely.
Joel Brind of the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute. The website is what?
It's BCPInstitute.
.com
BCPInstitute.org.
.org. Okay. Thank you very much, Joel Brind.
Good night.
Welcome. Good night.
Good night, Joel Brind. Thank you.
That is an important discussion, Terry
Absolutely.
O'Neill,
well,
because I am so tired of women being poisoned.
Yeah.
And you know, if you want to poison yourself, go ahead, but at least do it in the knowledge that you're poisoning yourself. That's all I ask. Is that unreasonable?
It's not unreasonable. Well, I might argue
with you
about
letting... Well, and then don't ask me to pay for your birth control pills.
Right.
That's now they've really got me ticked off.
I was really, really pleased that this discussion was able to go beyond just the medical consequences, because he's obviously thought through the implications and traveled down some of the roads.
Good God, you knew what you were doing back in 93.
Understands where it's coming from and where it's going, and that's all good stuff. And, I remember he mentioned that back then that I was one of the early... I'd forgotten that we were the first ever to cover his research. But it is kind of, in one way, disheartening. You know, it's all these years have gone by, and still, I mean, he should have a Nobel Prize for...
Terry O'Neill, the Internet will change all of this.
Yeah, we hope so.
You know, it will, because
people don't have
an excuse. You're not limited as far as your information sources go.
That's right. So, Joel Brind, PhD, Breast Cancer Prevention Institute, you are listening to the mighty Roadkill Radio. Here with Kerry Simpson and Terry O'Neill. It's 20 minutes past 8 if you're listening live here in the West Coast, Pacific Time. If you'd like to comment on anything that you've heard tonight or have a question of any of our guests, query the hosts, or criticize us even, please send us an email.
Who would criticize us, Terry?
Oh, I want to get criticized. I love to get into a fight. That's fine. Send us an email at roadkillradio@live.ca, and I've got it right here on my screen, and nobody has sent anything in yet, but if you send it in, we'll
That's because
we'll
the sun is shining.
That's true. It's beautiful out there, isn't it? At least here in the West Coast, but we have listeners from all across Canada, I know. And in the United States, we have a lot of guests from down there as well. Actually, it's interesting. We do seem to find a lot of guests from the eastern United States over the last while.